Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Listen Up with Jim Potts, only on LA Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone, and thank you for tuning in. It's always a pleasure to be here to discuss these very important issues with you. Well, today we're going to talk about a number of things. We're going to talk about part two from the murder and extremism part that we discussed last week. We did a part one today. We're going to talk about part two to that. We're also going to have a discussion regarding the cyber attacks, what employers should be doing and not doing, et cetera, hackers. Some of that good information there as well. So pretty much some surprising things in there that you know, would be of interest to you, I believe. And then we're going to talk about some other things, such as the a new emerging group called the Proud Boys. And we're going to talk about something a little bit more serene, I guess, that we had an unfortunate incident that took place in Silver Lake in Los Angeles just on Saturday at the Trader Joe's shootout there with a hostage situation. So I always like to talk about the current events as they happen also because people have questions. So I got some information for you to be able to share with you. But as always, I always like to start out with emails. I got an email from, looks like Emily actually, from Silver Lake. And she had mentioned to me about the shootout. And apparently she lives in that area. And she just says, this was so scary to think something like this in our small neighborhood could happen. Do you have any thoughts or suggestions about being a hostage? What do we do? What do we not do? Any suggestions would certainly be appreciated. Well, you know, it's actually kind of interesting that I had this conversation with a client not too long ago, as a matter of fact, and we did talk about these hostage situations. So I will share some tips with you out there, Emily, and for our other listeners, because you just never know. But, you know, this also shows you, as I've discussed before in some of my active shooter training classes, that I tell people, don't ever think it can't happen to you. It can happen to you. It can happen in your small community. Nobody is exempt in this country, and quite frankly, other countries, obviously, but nobody is exempt in our country from where these incidents can happen. And, you know, this actually is an incident that spilled over from a domestic violence situation, and it then turns around and impacts a business. And it's another thing that we always talk about, domestic violence. It can spill over into the workplace. And here's an example where it didn't necessarily, how do I want to say this? It didn't necessarily start because of somebody that actually worked for the business. It was something that started away from the business that was a domestic violence situation that spilled over into the business, even though nobody was related to the alleged perpetrator in this particular situation. So it can happen. It can happen from all different directions. And that's why we say businesses these days really have to prepare their employees for the unknown as well. Now, if you have any questions or comments, by the way, give me a call. The number is 818-602-4929, 818-602-4929. Or you can email me, as some people do, at listenupwithjp@pottsandassociates.com. But let me do this. Let me fill in, since we have a national broadcast with this, let me just fill in some facts here that even some of the people locally might not even know about. Now, This all started out in a home. Let's put it that way. The suspect has been identified as a Gene Evan Atkins. He's 28 years old. He's now been booked on suspicion of murder, and his bail's been set at $2 million. Now, the investigators are still looking at this. The information is still coming out. And unfortunately, in this incident, a person got killed. It was a manager of the store. I'm not going to give you her name. Her family's actually asked us or asked out there generally for people to respect their privacy, so I'm not necessarily going to give her name. I mean, if you Google it, you can probably find it. But he held several hostages for, you know, for a number of hours apparently starting at 3:30, although the incident itself actually started a little bit earlier. So let me share that information with you as well. Apparently, at around 1:30 or so, and this happened in South Los Angeles before it even got to Silver Lake, authorities indicated that the suspect had been involved in a family dispute. In that dispute, he shoots his 78-year-old grandmother 7 times before fleeing the scene with the woman he's also shot. His 78-year-old grandmother, he shoots her 7 times. How devastating is that to the family? Our grandparents, we hold them so sacred. I'm a grandparent 5 times over. I can't even imagine one of my grandchildren doing this to me. At any rate, the suspect took the woman, who was identified as his girlfriend, into a vehicle and drove off. Now, the authorities apparently tried to stop him in Hollywood, which is before Silver Lake, by the way. But then he led them on a chase, and at one point he opened fire on officers from the vehicle. And I guess he was shooting out the backside of the car, out the back window. Now, during that shootout, he crashed into a pole by the Trader Joe's, and that was on Hyperion Avenue. So that's how he ended up at the Trader Joe's. He was shooting at police. He crashed his vehicle. And then apparently he was shot in the arm during that exchange of gunfire. And then he ended up running into the supermarket, which is a Trader Joe's, as authorities returned fire, shooting out the glass doors of the business. I don't know about that part. I mean, this sounds like it was a running gun battle from that perspective. I'm not going to comment on the behavior, but that, I mean, everybody's shooting each other. It's not surprising that more people, quite frankly, weren't injured. Now, of course, when the employees and the customers heard all the glass shattering and the shots, you know, going off inside the store, they all dove for cover as the bullets flew. Now, I always tell people in my training classes, be sure to always know where your barriers are. Here's a situation where the barriers would have helped, especially in a store that they frequent quite often. And even if you don't frequent the store that often, it's still like a good idea when you're out in the general public to know where the barriers are. At any rate, unfortunately, the manager who was inside the store, it looks like she got shot during the shootout. Now, they tried to run the aid to her, but she died at the scene. Now, as the standoff continued, the suspect held people hostage and made demands with crisis negotiators. Again, this went on for a number of hours. And then I guess finally at around 6:30 p.m., the suspect surrendered and walked out with the hostages and asked if he could place the handcuffs on himself. I guess he didn't want to have them touch him. I guess he didn't want to be humiliated with them putting the cuffs on him. I don't know what the rationale to that would be. But it's sad. But they also don't know whose bullet killed this manager. Because, again, gunshots were just going off. And it's sad that she was a byproduct of this event. You know, it's amazing to me how when these things happen, people don't realize the ramifications and how it impacts other people's and other families. Now, not only is the shooter's family distraught, I'm sure, with all of this, because I know her brother, the victim's brother, put out a tweet, you know, saying that they, you know, appreciated everybody's best wishes, et cetera. But he's devastated. This was his younger sister. So that family now is distraught over this incident. And what about the people in the store? You know, what about the family of this shooter that he shoots his 78-year-old grandmother? Now, the last word I heard was that she's still in critical condition. So hopefully she's going to make it, and our thoughts and prayers certainly go out to her. So I don't know. You know, and the other woman, by the way, was only suffered a wound to her head, but it was a graze. A graze is just something that kind of glances off. Look at it that way. I don't want to say it's a scratch. It's probably a little bit more than that, but it doesn't penetrate the body when it's a graze. So, unfortunately, these kind of situations are going to happen. And I still emphasize, we have to be prepared. You know, when you're out there in the general public, your head needs to be on a swivel. You always need to know what's going on. This particular circumstances, I'm not sure what it took, because if the bullets are flying, that's going to be good enough for people. It means that there's an active shooter or something going on, and you're going to have to duck for cover. Now, Emily, you asked me a question. You asked me, are there any suggestions that I could give for hostage situations? Well, Let me just tell you that there's really two scenarios when it comes to hostage situations. The first one is when there's an unseen witness. Unseen witness. And I'll tell you what that is. That means that you're not a person that's really right in the view of the individual. So you're kind of looking at the situation from a vantage point. Let's put it that way. But you're not part of the hostage situation itself. So the first suggestion is a common sense suggestion, and don't intervene, obviously. I mean, you know, stay back, be the best witness you can, and start collating information. You have a pen and paper, start writing things down if you can, to jot things down, because, you know, people's memory gets a little vague as the time passes on and with everything that's going on. So if you can, and you've got some paper and a pen, write down, because the police are going to need that in the event of something where the person may get away, et cetera. Or if there's an aftermath, people want to know what's going on, because there's going to be a lot of panic going on. People are going to be running. People are going to be screaming. And everybody may not remember it the same thing. So if you're an unseen witness, you can end up being a very valuable witness. Obviously, if you can, we want you to call 911 and provide as much information as possible. And that's why I say that if you can get some information, jot it down. Now, look, I'm not suggesting that you start jotting down the information, get all your information collated, and then make the call to 911. I would really prefer you to do a visual, then make that call. Now, look, the calls that come into 911, if you listen to them, they're always people that are in a panic mode. They're screaming and hollering into the phone. It takes longer if you, in fact, don't get control of your emotions right at the moment. So calm down, get a hold of yourself, and be able to give the information as clearly as possible, and yes, as quickly as possible. The quicker that gets done is the quicker law enforcement can get there. Then, look, if you can, I say seal off the area. In other words, if anybody else is trying to walk up to the store, they don't know what's going on, you know, tell them, hey, there's something going on in the store, there's something going on, you know, stay back, you know, something of that nature. And again, some of this to me is common sense, but again, when that panic sets in, people do not know what to do. And then obviously at the end, report any other useful information, such as the number of hostages, the number of people involved, and their condition as best as possible as an unseen witness. So remember, this is from the fact that you're at a vantage point and you're observing what's going on. So that's one hostage situation. The other hostage situation is if you're taken hostage. Now, in this particular scenario that happened on Saturday, people were taken hostage. There's no doubt about it. I think there was like 40 to 50 people that they were talking about on the news. Now, when they say 40 to 50 people hostage, I doubt if 40 or 50 people is who he came out the store with. He probably came out the store with just a few people. But in the store, because everybody is basically on a lockdown mode, I think they're saying that that's a hostage situation with 40 or 50 people. I don't know where he was positioned in the store. That information has not been made general to the public at the moment. But it's a shopping store, so there were people in there. So 40 to 50, okay. But probably in his immediate area, he probably had just several people, because it's a lot easier for him to control those. And I also understand, by the way, that they had an employee who was getting some of the customers out the back door, et cetera, where some people were able to leave. Okay, so look, let's go through the hostage situation if you are taken hostage. First one, avoid any drastic action. In other words, try to be as calm as you can. Don't try to, do something that might jeopardize your safety and the safety of those around you. Try to remain calm, all right? Nice, slow, calm pace. Don't do anything where the individual might feel antagonized by your presence. Now, do not become argumentative or hostile. And that makes sense. What are you doing here? What are you doing? This is crazy. This is insane. Don't do that, all right? Again, stay calm. Don't be argumentative. Anytime somebody's holding a gun, we always say, follow the instructions of the person with the gun. Just that simple. And that, to me, is a common sense approach. But when people are in a panic mode, it doesn't always happen that way. Now, if it is necessary to speak, because now we're talking about you're in a situation, the person has a gun on the group, let's just say four or five people, whatever it is, they've got a gun. If it's necessary to speak, ask for permission. Again, we don't want to antagonize them in any way. Excuse me, may I ask you a question? Right, that's how you do it. You maintain eye contact, but don't give them a hard stare. Sometimes when it's a hard stare, they think that you're being antagonistic, and they think that you might be doing something. So don't give them a hard stare. All right? Now, the next one. Don't talk down to the captor. Treat them with respect. And I know that that may seem weird to treat them with respect, but again, understand, they've got a gun on you. Treat them with respect. All right? Be polite. Do whatever you have to do. Remember, your objective is to survive the situation. So treat them with respect. Don't antagonize them in any way. Now, let's say if this medication or first aid or restroom privileges are required. So sometimes when there's people that, if, depending on how long the hostage situation lasts, where somebody may need to take their medication, or they may have to be restroom breaks, again, depending on how long the situation is. And let's face it, and under those circumstances, somebody can become very nervous and they have to use the bathroom. So the last thing we want are puddles developing on the floor, all right? So we don't want people feeling like that and feeling uncomfortable with that. So it's okay, but ask for permission, all right? Can we do some restroom, you know, breaks here? Again, it depends upon the amount of time that we're talking about. This last one, when the hostage situation was about 3 hours, I'm not sure that would have been appropriate. Not to say there aren't some people that might not have a medical condition that requires them to go to the bathroom a little bit more often. But whatever you do, just remember you would have to ask for permission to do that. All right? And calmly say so and ask politely for permission. Can we get some restroom breaks after you've asked them for permission to speak? All right? Okay. The next one is, again, as a hostage, you want to be observant so that you can provide details to the authorities after the event is concluded. Look, in those kind of situations, come on, we know that they're going to be scary. People's minds are going to be racing, and you're not going to remember everything. And law enforcement has gotten, I mean, I've been on patrol, and, you know, you're asking witnesses for information. What color shirt was he wearing? Blue. You ask somebody else, what color shirt was he wearing? Yellow. You know, so what we have to do is try and separate some of that out. And the other thing is what we try to do is separate the witnesses away from each other so when we're getting the information, one is not overhearing somebody else. Because it can be tough sometimes trying to get the straight information. So one of the things that I would say is that once the situation has resolved itself, step away from the rest of the crowd so you can get your own thoughts together in terms of what happened. Even if you have to take out a pen, I always say there's nothing like, I hate to say it, documentation, but if you have something that you can write so that you can at least write down while your mind is clear and try and get as much information down so that when the authorities ask you and they start questioning you, you'll be able to give them some clear information, especially once again if A, the person has left the scene, or B, something else happens, because sometimes civil litigation comes up as a result of this also. So having the proper information would always be a good thing. Okay? So, Emily, I appreciate you sending me that email. Again, our best wishes goes out to the manager who unfortunately was killed yesterday. Goes out to her family. And, you know, this gentleman appears to be somebody who's being brought to justice at this point. So we'll let the criminal justice system take care of his situation. And don't know what prompted all of this. Domestic violence situations are what they are, and I'm sure there's always two sides to the story. However, I don't believe that anything can justify the actions that were taken yesterday. It sounds like emotions were running high. Okay, Emily, again, thank you very much. I got another email that I found very interesting that I thought I would share, and that information was a person asking me about ICE. And they're asking me about my opinion about whether or not ICE should be, they should just get rid of ICE. And you know what I'm talking about when I say ICE, I'm assuming, and that's the United States Immigration and Customs Enforcement Organization. It was created in 2003, by the way. So ICE has not been around forever. They've only been around in the last 15 years. But they were created for a specific reason. And I've mentioned this on the show before. Maybe that's what prompted the email. I don't know. But their primary mission is to promote homeland security and public safety through the criminal and civil enforcement of the federal laws governing the border control. And they also help to investigate and prevent terrorist threats and other criminal acts. Now, this is unsigned. I'm not going to read the email address or anything like that. I guess the person didn't want to be named to ask me my thoughts on it. Well, let me just tell you, I try to stay away from the political things, but this is one I think that is important only because I think that their mission is for all the right reasons. And now I know that there's groups out there that are looking at this and thinking that, you know, they should be abandoned because of everything that's going on with the border, the issue with the people crossing the border with their children being separated. I don't know that it should be abandoned. I think the basic premise for ICE is for the right reasons. And hopefully these politicians will figure out what they want to do and stop, you know, being, you know, fighting with each other across the aisle on this. And I think that the problem really is not necessarily ICE, but the sensitive issue that's going on right now that they have to do under the zero tolerance policy under this administration. Well, I shouldn't say under this administration. It's not just under this administration. It's under other administrations as well. It's how we handle those situations, I think, that are important. So even if we have to put certain safeguards in place, I think that's what the smart thing to do. I don't know. Look, you know, I got listeners out there. You know, if any of you want to comment on it, again, the number is 818-602-4929. And I'd be interested in seeing what you as the general public, you know, would think about this. I mean, I know when we're watching TV, we're watching the news, they're expressing opinions, the politicians are expressing opinions, and certainly the people who are touched by this on a day-by-day basis are definitely expressing opinions. But from the general public, it would be interesting to know exactly how other people feel about this. So if you want to send me an email and we can talk about this a little bit, that would be on the air. You know, that would be great. Or if you want to call in to discuss it or make a comment, that would be appreciated as well. Okay. Last week, that takes care of the emails, by the way. I have another one here. I don't think I'm going to get to it right now in the interest of time, but we have time at the end. I'll come back to that one. Right now is what I'd like to do is go back and discuss part two of what we were talking about last week about murder and extremism in the U.S. of A. Now, look, where we left off was I wanted to give you some statistics on some things. So these extremist-related killings in 2017, and as I told you before, we had 2017, 16, and 15, in which years were a little bit more. But I will tell you that the white supremacists were responsible for 18 of the 34 murders documented in 2017. Now, a right-wing anti-government extremist committed one murder for sure, while an adherent of the alt-life, they call it, which he's to the right. Now, that's an offshoot. Now, they reject, actually, and call themselves that they're not white supremacists necessarily, the alt-light is called, while retaining the alt-right's other hateful views of Muslims and immigrants and LGBTQ community. That's still wrong, in my opinion. I don't agree with these groups that focus on any particular, you know, group of sorts, as with the LGBT community, with minorities, Muslims, immigrants, and things of that nature. I think that's personally wrong. But I will give you another stat. 20 of the 34 extremist-related murders in the United States in 2017, or actually it was like 59%, were related to right-wing extremism. Now, comparing this to 2016, there was only 17% of extremist murders, all right, that were attributable to the right-wing extremists. Well, though, again, in 2016, there was an aberration. Over the past 10 years, and I'm talking 2008 to 2017, domestic extremism has been responsible for at least 387 murders. And of these, 274, 71%, were actually committed by right-wing extremists of one type or another. So this is really something that's out of control, in my opinion, with this extremism. Extremism, in my opinion, in any regard, is bad. It's not good. Those are emotions that are rising out of people, and they're putting people into categories of why they want to like them and not like them. And that's never going to be a good thing. We're never going to have a peaceful society where people are putting people under the microscope based upon who they are. So I will say that. Now, let me just give you some percentages here. All right. What I'm getting ready to give you is domestic extremism-related killings in the United States by a perpetrator affiliation, meaning that they were affiliated with a particular group. So, white supremacy, of the total deaths, white supremacy was responsible for 53% now. Anti-government extremism, 26%. Alt-life, which I meant light, and that's L-I-T-E, just to let you know that, in case I'm not pronouncing that for you clearly over the air like this. They were responsible for only 3%. Black nationalists were also responsible for 3%. And then domestic Islamic extremism, 15%. Now, 20 of the 34 extremist-related murders, these are high numbers. These are high numbers for these people because they were white right-wing extremists. Now, let's look at this stat. Domestic extremism-related killings in the United States by a perpetrator affiliation in 2016. Now, 2016, the total deaths back then was 71. Now, these numbers have drastically changed because now we're looking at only 20% of the extremist murders were related to right-wing extremists. So that was important to note. So something has escalated the situation up. Now, there are those that would probably argue it's because of the current administration, et cetera, and that's fine. Everybody's entitled to their view, no doubt about that. But you have white-wing supremacists involved in those 71 deaths. You have anti-government extremism, black nationalism, which I'm going to talk about in a moment also, and domestic Islamic extremism. All right? Now, I have to tell you, 69% was in 71. White-wing extremists, anti-government was at 13%. Black nationalists was at 7%. And then domestic Islamic extremists was at 11%. So these four groups contain other groups. I want you to know that. In the upcoming shows, I'm actually going to focus on some of these groups in particular. California right now is one of the leading states. I've mentioned this on the air before earlier on. California has the largest number of hate groups in the country. And that's sad to note. I mean, this is a pretty big state. I get that. But why it gravitates towards California, I have no idea, for them to have so many issues. Normally, we're kind of a little bit more laid back than that, so I thought anyway, but, you know, there it is. Now, one final set of stats that I want to share. We're going back now to between 2008 and 2017. During that time frame, 387 total deaths. 71% right-wing extremism. And that's for all of the groups of right-wing extremism, just to let you know. Left-wing, 26%. Islamic extremism, only 3%. Now, remember, we're talking from 2008 until the present. Now, notice in there, I said nothing about black nationalism over the last 10 years. So let's talk about that in a minute. But what I do want you to be aware is that Islamic extremists were responsible for a number of these percentages, calling 26%, with 8 of those from this bike path killing or something of that nature that they had. I think I mentioned that last week as well. But now I want you to understand something about these individuals. Over the past 10 years, they've been responsible for 99 of the 387 documented extremist-related murders. Now, what's remarkable about these murders is that the overwhelming majority were committed in just a handful of relatively high casualty attacks as opposed to the much more numerous but usually small-scale deadly incidents involving other types of extremism. So, if you follow me on that, that's basically telling you that these attacks are high casualty, but they're smaller in nature than some of these mass situations sometimes that go on, believe it or not. Now, I want you to understand something. 5 of the 34 murders in 2017, which only represents, you know, a small percentage in comparison, were committed by black nationalists. Now, these black nationalists, for simplicity, the Center on Extremism includes both black nationalists and anarchists in the broader category of left-wing extremism. And I know I don't talk about left-wing extremism at all. While acknowledging the black extreme nationalists, the black nationalists include some adherents who don't necessarily fit neatly within that category. As an example, in April of 2017 in Fresno, California, Corey Ali Mohammed was accused of allegedly murdering a security guard at a hotel, then several days later embarking on a shooting spree that seemed to target white people as victims. Now, you might remember that one. That was all over the news. Mohammed was charged with killing three people in that spree, bringing his total to four deaths before police were able to arrest him. Now, his father subsequently said that his son believed in a war between whites and blacks. Now, the following month in Dallas, Texas, Derek Lamont Brown, a member of the Huey P. Newton Golf Club, now, Gun Club. Some of you may not remember Huey P. Newton, but he was a Black Panther during the late 60s and the 70s. And he and Bobby Seale, Eldridge Cleaver, a number of them were very well known at that time. So I guess they've got a gun club down there. And now the former Dallas chairman of the new Black Panther Party apparently shot and killed his grandfather, with whom he had shared a residence, and then wounded a neighbor at the same time before fatally shooting himself after police arrived at the scene. Now, these deadly events followed the 2016 murders of eight police officers in Dallas and Baton Rouge at the hands of black nationalists. So, you know, even back in the day, I'll call it, when Huey P. Newton and the and Bobby Seale, et cetera, when they were running around, you know, they were the ones that were talking about killing police officers. This, to me, is a piece of that, it sounds like, with the same kind of thinking. And this business about killing eight police officers. Again, you might remember that one on the news. Now, they also attempted vehicular murders of police officers in Phoenix as well. Then there was another one that was a shootout in Illinois. Now, again, these are individuals that are black nationalists. And basically, these black nationalists, two of them, as a matter of fact, in St. Louis, Missouri, tried to kill police officers and also wanted to bomb the Gateway Arch. Now, I don't know if you've ever been to St. Louis, but they have that huge arch there. So that's a tourist attraction, et cetera. They wanted to bomb the Gateway Arch. Now, you take these incidents together, they represent the most significant black nationalist-related violence since the early 1980s and the 70s, and should be something of a concern as possible emerging extremist threat. Though I will tell you that so far, they represent a smaller threat than posed by the right-wing extremists and the Islamic extremists. So there's not a major issue with them going on right now in this area, but it's certainly one that's on its way, and that would be a concern because 10 years ago they weren't around like this, as I mentioned. But now it seems like they're starting to emerge, and this could be as a result of all of these incidents that we hear about, the police shootings of African Americans and whether or not they were justified, unjustified. And, you know, those are concerns for people. So, you know, I'm not going to defend police officers who shoot people for without a proven reason. I mean, so don't be sending me hate mail on that. There was one police officer I recall from an incident where he shot this black individual, a male, as he was running away. Now, that made no sense to me at all. So I believe he's going through the criminal justice system, or it may have already been resolved. But those kind of incidents, I think, are absolutely wrong. Can't happen that way. Now, but again, these are the type of things that get people upset, that cause riots, some of these other issues that have come out over the last couple of years. So as a result of that, some of these black nationalists, of course, are going to be able to gain momentum, you know, because of when these incidents happen. So what we have to do is understand that, first of all, police officers are not perfect. But if they do make the mistakes, then they, like anybody else, need to be responsible for their consequences. And hopefully, if that happens, maybe it'll slow down some of these other things. But again, the black nationalists are a smaller percentage as opposed to the larger percentage from the right-wing extremists as well as the Islamic extremists as well. If you have any questions or comments, you know, please feel free to call in at 818-602-4929. We'd be glad to take your calls. They got some other groups that I'll be talking about today a little bit also. And one of those is called the Proud Boys. This is an organization also that's emerging. And they're a group that appears to be on the right. We'll put it that way. And they've been, they've been on the internet. The internet, to me, is what's creating part of our problems, because they are communicating with each other very easily. And these different groups, they don't have to come together for meetings. They can get together on the internet and decide where they're going to go. Kind of reminds me of those flash mobs where these people all get together and they start dancing or something at these different malls and things of that nature. And so because of that communication, they're able to get together very quickly at a given site. And then if they read on the internet that there's a counter group there, somebody they don't like, they can appear there. So they could put the message out instantly. And now you have these unrest situations because they're all coming together. And you know when two competing groups like this get together, you know what the end result's going to be. It's going to create a problem. And they're going to end up with the riots. The police have to come and intervene in it as well. So the internet certainly is not helping us, for sure. So this one group that's called the Proud Boys, let me tell you a little bit about who they are. I got a call from a client, and they were concerned because they own a restaurant. And they had heard about this group that's going out and meeting at these different places. And, well, hold on a second. I'm getting a call here. So let me see. We're getting a caller here. Hi, you're live on the air with Jim Potts on LA Talk Radio. Do you have a question or a comment to share?
Hi, Jim. How's it going? Yeah, my name is Warren. I was at one of your presentations recently. I did a very good job, so I've been listening in today. Now, you've spoken on some of these, right-wing and black nationalists, things like that. Have you heard at all on the news about any of these groups, like Antifa or By Any Means Necessary?
Actually,
I've been kind of seeing some issues sometimes.
Yes, as a matter of fact. First of all, Warren, I appreciate you calling in. But yes, By Any Means Necessary, they have, I want to say they've been emerging, but let me just tell you something. The reality is that group, By Any Means Necessary, it really goes back, believe it or not, way back. There was a book written by Malcolm, I shouldn't say written by Malcolm X, it took a lot of Malcolm X's speeches, and the author wrote a book in 1993. And in there, they basically talk about the evolution of Malcolm X's views. I don't know if you know Malcolm X or know of Malcolm X, but he was...
Yeah, okay, good.
But at any rate, they took his views on political alliances and women's rights and intermarriage. They didn't like interracial marriages, capitalism, and socialism. And they took a lot of his speeches and actually put them in a book. Now, the name of the book, believe it or not, is called By Any Means Necessary. But when I was doing some research on all of my, because I do a lot of research on this stuff, this actually goes back to 1964. Malcolm X was given a speech, and he put that expression out, By Any Means Necessary. It really goes back to a French intellect. His name was Jean-Paul Sartre, and he had written a play called Dirty Hands. So Malcolm X, way back in 1964, capitalized on an expression by Jean-Paul Sartre about By Any Means Necessary. So that's how it kind of originated. And the theory is to leave open all available tactics for a desired end, including violence. Now, they will say that only if violence is not necessary. If it's not necessary, it should not be used. But you know how that could possibly go, Warren. It can go into an area where who determines whether or not that violence is necessary. If we have people And I would say that these individuals are extremists also. Their views turn from an emotional standpoint, which then can turn into a violent standpoint by people, in my opinion, that may oppose their views. So from that perspective, yes, I've heard of them. Now, are you aware that they have a nickname called BAMN, B-A-M-N?
Yeah, I think I've heard of that recently.
Let me tell you something. BAMN, it's called B-A-M-N, is a coalition to defend affirmative action, integration, and also immigration rights, and the fight for equality by any means necessary. That's the growing group right now. And they're all part of this attitude about by any means necessary. So they have a website. I don't suggest you go to it. I don't know how they track them these days. So I don't necessarily want you to do that. But they're out there, and once again, they've captured the internet. Now, I don't know with these situations, Warren, who it is collectively, who's the leaders, who's not the leaders, or these are just people that gather on the internet and talk. But they've got this down to a, let's say, how am I going to put it? Down to a fine art, I should say, or a science. Because what they do, they have a pledge that their members actually have to take. It's called a BAMN, B-A-M-N, pledge. And they have all of these different things, the pledges that all of these individuals have to make to be a member of this, you know, of this organization. These organizations are starting to emerge, and I think if you've been listening, you heard me today say that California has more of these types of groups now than any other state.
Which is crazy.
Yeah, it is crazy. But again, Warren, it's all based on people's emotions, I think. Now, some people argue that people are lashing out against the current administration. I don't like to get into the politics and, you know, who to vote for, who not to vote for, whether I agree or disagree with the current administration, because I don't want to get all that hate mail. All I'm saying is that the realities are, I think people are reacting to the politics of this nation, whether you're on, doesn't matter what side of the aisle that you're on. And you're right. It is more of a left-wing situation than it is a right-wing situation. And I think a lot of times we hear about it, about the right-wing extremists. I was just talking about the right-wing extremists, and then I mentioned about the black nationalists that are more of a left-wing extremist. But this is a group that's growing on the left side. So I'm sure that they are being watched by the authorities because they do perpetrate a certain amount of violence. Have you heard or seen anything that sparked you for this? You must have seen something on the news or something.
Yeah, I remember back when that Berkeley stuff was going on with the, the fires and violence and whatnot. And then, I definitely have to agree with you. I mean, the extremism on both sides is just getting out of hand and insane. And, I mean, I think, some of them might start with a good message. But, I mean, like when you listen to or see these videos about Antifa and stuff like that, kind of go against themselves because they, preach a message of, we're anti-fascist, we're against hate, blah, blah, blah. But then you see them, wearing bandanas and helmets and clubs and, beating the crap out of people and whatnot, which almost kind of seems to go completely against what their message started off as. So I kind of agree with you when people start getting this emotional over their beliefs. I mean, they seem to go to, one way or the other, and either is not too good.
Do you think it almost becomes counterproductive?
Yeah, I mean, when you're preaching a message that's supposed to be against hate, but then you're, showing up to peaceful protests, with weapons and masks and, harming people that are there peacefully, I don't get how that demonstrates your message.
You know what? They have a group out there, and you probably have not heard of this group, but it's, Warren, it's called the Black Bloc, B-L-O-C. And I don't mean black in terms of like African-Americans. The Black Bloc, if you watch some of these news events, like you're talking about Berkeley, and people were destroying things and all of that. Now, if you watch some of these riots sometimes and these unrests where people are protesting, they have guys that are wearing Something like you were just talking about, where they wear these black hoods and they've got the black mask over their face. If you look into those newsreels sometimes, you will see those individuals. So some of these things we have to understand, that people penetrate or they get into these groups or these events, I should say, where they show up and they're the ones that sometimes that are creating the violence and not necessarily the members of the group that organized it, if you see where I'm coming from on that.
Yeah, I think, you know, I've actually heard of multiple groups like that that are actually funded by some people. I mean, if I'm not mistaken, I think a while back I heard George Soros and some people have funded some groups up basically to go in and just kind of cause chaos and anarchy at some of these, you know, protests and events.
Yeah, well, just to let you know, okay, you're the one that mentioned his name, not me. Which is okay, because I've heard the same thing, quite frankly, where some of these groups are being funded. And again, I don't know how much validity to that there is. I think for some people, when they're extremists, for others, they just show up because of the fact that they're creating this thing. You know, this whole business about, like you mentioned, Berkeley. You know, Berkeley, this is not new for Berkeley. I mean, this goes back, I remember when I was in college back in the early 70s, I mean, well, then a lot of the campuses, people were protesting and things of that nature. I get that. Berkeley seems to have been one of the ones that have held on to it for all these years because of their thinking. I think Angela Davis was teaching up there as well. I don't know if you remember, well, if you know Angela Davis, but Angela Davis was a member of the Black Party, Black Panther Party as well. Again, you're talking about during the 70s and things of that nature. So at any rate, they're definitely out there. And again, my concern for any of these groups, we call them extremists for a reason. They're going over the top with some of this. And we're never going to get this all settled by those kind of demonstrations, in my opinion. I think we need to let the politicians handle this. Unfortunately, those guys can't agree on anything. That's the problem.
Right.
That's the problem that I see. And I don't. It's not even a question of taking the sides on who's right and who's wrong. The reality is they're not getting it settled. And for you know, that's why this nation, in my opinion, is being torn apart. Again, I'm not taking sides. I'm saying these guys have to come to a truce and sit down and try to figure this out. Because if they don't, it's going to tear this nation apart, and groups like this are always going to emerge. Well, Warren, I appreciate you calling in. I really do. And thank you very much.
Thank you, and keep doing what you're doing.
I appreciate it. Thank you so much.
All right.
Bye.
Thank you.
Well, that was Warren called in on that, and I'm glad that he did. It's always nice to get the opinion of the listeners as well. Okay, finalizing on that BAM, B-A-M-N, I'm calling it. So just, I don't want you to think BAM is just by itself, B-A-M. There's an N on the end of that. You know, you could check it out and see what it's all about. Okay, now we got that out of the way. I want to talk about this business about the cyber attack. So I think I was talking about the Proud Boys, actually. Maybe I should finish up on that a little bit. I think I do want to do that in the last few minutes that we have here, which means I'll be getting to the cyber attacks next week. Let me tell you about these Proud Boys. These Proud Boys, there's about 20 members of the Proud Boys. They consider themselves Western chauvinists. It's an organization that advertises chapters across North America and Britain now, by the way. And apparently they got together at a club, and then one of the competing, you know, groups, so to speak, and, you know, from the left, found out that they were actually going to be at this bar called Griffin. And so this group turned around and said, hey, Proud Boys are going to be down there. Let's go down there. So what did they do? They show up. And then they start informing the clientele of the Griffin. Hey, do you know who those guys are? Those guys are the Proud Boys. And so that group that showed up second was really the one that stirred things up. These other guys weren't there to create a problem. But then again, here we go. The emotions are rising. You got internet access, so people knew that they were going to be there. The question my client had for me was, can they, as a business, refuse service? To me, a business can always refuse service. I mean, sometimes you even see the signs up when you go in there and say, we reserve the right to refuse service. I mean, if people are in there creating a problem, I don't see that being a problem at all. I think that you can do that. Now, the reason why these guys were quickly spotted, the Proud Boys I'm talking about, because they have matching outfits. They wear black Fred Perry polo shirts. They're striped yellow on the fringes, usually complemented with their Make America Great Again cap. Now, this is the uniform for the Proud Boys. Now, I want to tell you something. The Southern Poverty Law Center, which is big for putting people into these categories, by the way, they call them a violent hate group. You know, though it describes itself merely as a defender of traditional male and Western values. Well, it's okay to call yourself that, but let's make sure that on your end that you're not being violent. Now, my understanding is in order for them to become a member of the Proud Boys, they have to be initiated, and the way that the initiation takes place is that they've got to go someplace and be disruptive. So even though they may not have started out being disruptive that night at the Griffin, the realities are is that they very easily could have moved into that direction. So just keep an eye out for them, and you know, we'll see what happens. Remember, for all you owners of these establishments, do you have a right to refuse? You absolutely do. All right, you've been listening to Jim Potts at LA Talk Radio. It's time to close out the show. But let me remind you that you can follow me on Twitter at twitter.com/JimPottsAuthor. Be sure to join me next week. Well, I'll start talking about some more of this on the cyber attacks, because I really didn't get a chance to talk about it today. But I promise you I will get to it next week. I will probably talk about some of the hot-button topics that come up between now and then. And again, I'll be looking forward to receiving any information regarding people's opinions about whether or not I should be disbanded or not. Until then, we want you to be aware, we want you to be vigilant, and we want you to be safe. See you next week. Bye.
You're listening to Listen Up with Jim Potts, only on LA Talk Radio.